speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome on this Monday, July 22nd, 2019. I'm David Knight, your host. You know, there's a couple of issues here. As I see this story that really got me angry over the weekend. Parents told they could lose their kids over unpaid school lunches. You know, this story has a lot of different dimensions. First of all, the idea that you're going to bring your lunch in a brown bag or even a lunchbox like we used to have when I was a kid, that is pretty much gone the way of the dodo bird, because now you can get subsidized, federally subsidized school lunches if you're up to 185% of the poverty level, which is about $46,000. So that's part one of the problem, building a dependency. Part two is the idea that people don't even think that they should have to pay that. But then the most egregious part of this that I saw was that you understand that if you're going to make yourself a slave of the government by accepting a free lunch, right? We've always told everybody there's no such thing as a free lunch, right? Tonstoffel. There's no such thing as a free lunch. And this is the evidence of it right here. You think you're going to get a free lunch. And then after a while, you get kind of arrogant about it. It's like, well, you know, this is subsidized. I think it ought to be totally free. And you don't pay for it. And then because you've got 1,000 parents in this one school district in Pennsylvania, they said, well, we're $20,000 behind in payments. And some of these parents, four parents, owe up to $450. And so they sent out threatening letters saying, you pay up, or we're going to turn you in to Child Protective Services, and they'll take your kids away and put them in foster care. If you set yourself up as a dependent, as a slave of the government, they will make you a literal slave, your children as well. And so these people who want to get into the free lunch program, and where did this begin? It began with the heavy subsidies of the federal government and the idea that even people who are on food stamps should not have to be burdened with preparing a lunch for their children. Instead, they will go to schools where they will get the federal subsidy, and the federal government will tell them what food they must and must not serve everybody. Remember, Michelle Obama got into the school lunch program, and she pushed for a lot of things. One of those was to make sure that everybody gets Greek yogurt served to them, because their political favorite, Chobani yogurt, pretty much has a monopoly on Greek yogurt. So after subsidizing this foreign immigrant with nearly $1 million in New York to give him a yogurt factory, then they demand that people buy his product. And a lot of other things that nobody wants to buy. I mean, when I was in school, nobody wanted the school lunches. That was like the absolute worst choice. And now it's gotten a lot worse, thanks to Michelle Obama. But folks, this is really about slavery, isn't it? It's about conditioning you into socialism. And so we're going to talk about communism today, the communism of the Democrat Party. They're not progressives. They're not even, you know, you can call them socialists, that's fine. But they're really communists. As I pointed out on Friday, you know, we had that clip going back to 1969. Think about that. Everybody said, oh, moon landing, 1969. Well, there's something else that happened 50 years ago. G. Edward Griffin, the guy who wrote the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, talking about the creation of the Federal Reserve, told everybody, hey, look, here's a 13-year-old Communist Party document talking about how if you don't like somebody, you call them a, you position yourself as anti-fascist, because nobody likes fascism. And then if they persist, you associate them with groups. You call them racist. And then you associate them with groups that nobody likes. And now we see that being acted out today. And it wasn't, that was 63 years ago, the communists wrote that blueprint. Yeah, nothing has really changed. And now we have Bernie Sanders out there saying he wants to abolish the Electoral College. I've got a long list of things the Democrats want to abolish. We could just kind of sum it up and say life as you know it in America, they want to abolish. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Deceit. telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome on this Monday, July 22nd, year of our Lord, 2019. I'm David Knight, your host. As I said at the top of the hour, this story about parents being threatened with having their children kidnapped and taken away, turned over to foster care, because some of them owe as much as, wait for it, $450. That's the price of a child in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania, of course, the same place that gave us Jerry Sandusky. Same place that gave us, so far, the biggest, I think it's still the biggest, Catholic Church scandal. And, of course, that's where you had Pope Francis choose to do his worldwide family conference, right there at the site of the spot where they'd had the biggest pedophile scandals in the church's history in the United States. That's the way you do it, right? You go to a spot where there's a problem, and then you hold an event that is exactly the opposite thing. Or you come up with a system of slavery. You call it smart cities. You talk about saving the environment, and everybody lines up for it. You come up with a really stupid car. You call it a smart car. You call a phone that turns everybody into blithering idiots who can't even cross the street without getting run over. You call that a smartphone, because people are looking down at their phone all the time anymore. You can't have eye-to-eye contact with anyone anymore. And they don't see anything coming. And they don't see what's coming down the road that is even worse than a than an automobile. Yeah. So, by the way, that reminds me, you probably saw the story on the Drudge Report. In Vienna, Austria, they had to suspend their test of self-driving buses. Why? Well, because it hit a pedestrian. The only saving grace is that it moves at a snail's pace. It was going at its top speed of 7.5 miles per hour. Yes, that is the pace of life that you will be living the future in your driverless cars or driverless buses. But of course, I don't think it had anybody in it because certainly around here in Austin, you know, this has always been the dream of all the little petty bureaucrats who want to control your life, right? Every aspect of your life. Whether it is housing, they want to control that. They want to subsidize, you know, come on in, we'll subsidize. Food, same thing. Yeah, that's what we see here with these school lunches. Transportation, let's do that. I talked before about the Raleigh City Council meeting that I went to. And this woman who, like Bernie Sanders, had just gone to the Soviet Union before it fell. And she was just waxing eloquent about how wonderful it was that you could travel anywhere in Moscow under the Soviet Union on their public transportation system for like 9 cents. We got to do that here in Raleigh. In Raleigh. The hometown of, essentially the hometown of Andy Griffith and Barney Fife. Do we really need that in a place where you roll the streets up at 8 o'clock? No, it's a small town. It's much bigger, however, than Booty Gay's town. It's about four times bigger than Booty Gay's town. But you don't need public transportation in these small towns. And you don't need big cities that require public transportation, but that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to force the problem by packing everybody into these cities. But that has always been their dream. They want to provide public transportation because they want to control your transportation. And so here in Austin, we have buses, same all the time, moving slowly, stopping in front of you, waiting for a very long time, nobody getting in, nobody getting off, nobody there except the bus driver. And so once we make the transition to driverless buses, we'll be completely free of even that driver and the bus. And we can just pay to have these things roam around the streets, blocking traffic, and occasionally hitting pedestrians. But that's the wave of the future. But let's go back to this whole story of slavery. There's no such thing, as I said at the top of the hour, there's no such thing as a free lunch. And this illustrates it. You turn yourself over to the get the free lunch, and then eventually they wind up coming after your kids. And this is all being driven by the federal government. Let's subsidize lunches for people that get up to 185% of the poverty level. That's $46,000. And then if they don't pay the little subsidy, then you start racking up their tab. They get to a certain level and you take away their kids, right? All these Democrats who are crying crocodile tears over child separation at the border, and they have never once. And I've been talking about this for over a year. As soon as they started talking about child separation, I said, oh, you want to talk about child separation? Let's talk about what the Democrat bureaucrats are doing to families with CPS. No due process. Most of the time, there's never even an accusation of anything that is violent or sexual. And yet they take the children without due process. And you've got to sue them in court. It becomes a case just like civil asset forfeiture, where they take your property, your car, your home, your plane, your cash. They take your property, charge your property with committing a crime. And they say, well, this is a civil process. This is a rule that you broke of the administrative state, of the rulemaking bureaucracy. And so since this isn't a law that you've broken, you don't get any due process. You don't have any presumption of innocence. You don't have any protection against excessive punishment. You don't even get a trial because you're never even charged with the crime. They just take your stuff. And so it's $9,000 versus U.S. government. That's literally what it is. They put that in as a formality. They take the cash. If you want to get your money back, you got to sue them in court. And that's what you got to do now to get your kids back in most of these cases. But they don't care. They only care about the foreigners who are criminally trespassing. And in many cases, these children coming across the border, as we all know by now, it's been documented over and over again. In many cases, they're being brought across the border by child traffickers. And they're going to be sold into slavery, you know, for people like Jeffrey Epstein and his elite cadre of politicians. Let me tell you something. All of this back and forth about Jeffrey Epstein, have you ever heard any of the corporate mainstream media talk about having these politicians introduce a bill to take away the statute of limitations of just 3 years for children who are abused by these pedophiles? Why would that be? Why do you think they would not do one of the most obvious things that could be done? Does that tell you more than anything? That tells you right there, more than any of the Jeffrey Epstein documents that are going to come to light, the fact that they have a 3-year statute of limitations and the fact that not one out of the 535 elected members of Congress, senators and House of Representatives, not one of them, to my knowledge, has ever offered a bill to take that away. Why is that? Could it be the same reason that they set up Dennis Hastert, a known pedophile, that they put him in Congress, that they groomed him to be Speaker of the House, that they left him as Speaker of the House longer than any other, certainly longer than any other Republican. It may be longer than any other Democrat. I'm not sure. A known pedophile. Is that the reason why they're not changing the statute of limitations? Yes. We have a pedo USA government. That's the sick news about this. So you talk about protecting the children at the border. You're not going to protect them from a county that threatens to take away children because their parents owe $450 in lunch money to a system that has lured them, has basically given them a slave mentality. And now they're going to get the full slave treatment. They demand free stuff. And we're going to talk about the communists that are running for office when we come back. You know, we got Bernie Sanders out there. And all these Democrats saying we've got to have a $15 an hour minimum wage. And yet he won't pay his own campaign staff workers $15 an hour. But he's got a long list, like the other Democrats do, a long list of things that they want to abolish. Yeah, they want to abolish the Electoral College. They want to abolish private insurance. They want to abolish private health care. They want to abolish the border. They want to abolish all law enforcement when it comes to the border, especially, but in other areas as well. They want to abolish private gun ownership, private colleges, and on. We'll go down the list, talk about all the things they want to abolish, but you know, you can sum it up in one thing. They want to get rid of America. This is what they're all about. They're nothing but anarchists and communists and the Democrat Party. It's time to recognize that. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
set me free. Why don't you, babe? Get out of my life. Why don't you, babe? You really don't want me.
Welcome back. You know, yeah. Let me free. Get out of my life. You know, if you let these people get in your life and you have them offer you free everything, we can see how this is going to happen. You know, when you look in Pennsylvania, the school district, 1,000 parents owe us money. We're owed $20,000. So that means that on average, these parents owe $20. And they get a letter from the school district threatening to take their kids away and turn them over to foster care. $20 on average. Yeah, do the math. Even if you went to government school like I did, you can still do that math. $20 on average. Four of those parents owe $450. Oh, well, definitely take the kids away from that. Those parents. Now, let's jump from that to all the whining and moaning going on about Rand Paul, the only person in Washington who says, if we're going to pass entitlement programs, then we need to figure out how we're going to pay for this. The only person in either party, whether you're talking about House or Senate or the White House, whether you're talking about Republicans or Democrats, the only person anywhere in Washington that is talking about the budget is Rand Paul. And, of course, he's now being demonized by Jon Stewart, who Rand Paul calls a gutter snipe. And I think that's probably a polite term for him. I would probably come up with something that would make President Trump blush if I were to talk about Jon Stewart in this particular campaign. I think it is beneath even the Democrats to try to virtue signal over this particular issue and to misrepresent what Rand Paul is talking about. Let's just, I mentioned this on Friday. I said, this is the issue that neither party wants to talk about. And if you don't think that government debt is a problem, I'll repeat to you, the Pennsylvania School District just sent out a letter to 1,000 families who owed on average $20, threatening to take their kids away for foster care. You don't think that the government's going to get high-handed and rough with people over this debt? You don't think things are going to get tough when the global economy turns away from this magic unicorn financial dollar that we've had, that we've constructed for the last 50, 60 years? That's not going to last forever. This debt bubble is not going to last forever. We're eventually going to go the way of Zimbabwe and Venezuela if we keep abusing our hegemony, our economic and military hegemony. All everybody is already seeing, that's the source of our power, the dollar. If they move away from that dollar and we're left with this crushing debt, we become Zimbabwe and Venezuela overnight if we lose the reserve status of the dollar. You don't think that Russia and China know that? You don't think Iran knows that? You don't think they're moving to make that happen? They're already moving away from the financial clearing structures. There's a lot of talk everywhere about creating alternative currencies. Facebook wants to be the global currency. They want to have a cryptocurrency that will effectively be a global ID for everybody. And as Facebook was being questioned on the on Capitol Hill, some of the people said, well, you know, you've pushed certain people off of your platform. You know, that'd be people that we don't want to name Alex Jones in the halls of Congress anymore. We don't want to pretend that he was the first person that they completely deplatformed. Don't want to talk about that. But, you know, you've moved off certain people and, you know, you've told your community there on Facebook and Instagram that they can criticize these people that you have listed as enemies of Zuckerberg. But they cannot say anything polite about them. And if they even show a picture, smiling picture, posing with one of these individuals, they will have their account suspended, as Leo Zagami did when he came here over 4th of July, took a picture with Alex Jones. Boom, Instagram takes him off immediately. And then they go to the extent of saying, and by the way, if you want to threaten these people that we don't like, that Zuckerberg has put on his hate list, anybody that he's put a fatwa, a Facebook fatwa against, you can make a threats of violence, or you can put out death threats with that, and we're okay. Now, they eventually pull that back under threat of legal action. But that's the spirit of this. Now, you want those people controlling currency and the economy and being able to control whether or not you are able to participate in the global economy. That's where we're headed. And if it's not done by Facebook, it will be done by the governments. And they will have a partnership with existing banks, with existing Federal Reserve, to make sure that they know everything about you. It's going to be know your customer up to the level of George Orwell. And then they will take you on or off. This is why I am so concerned about how they've manufactured and exacerbated this problem at the border, both Republicans and Democrats. It is now, it truly is a crisis. It truly is an emergency. Nothing is still being done about it. As you saw the headlines on the Drudge Report, as Ann Coulter had pointed out months ago, President Trump kept talking about how he's building the border, building the wall and so forth. And it was total nonsense, total nonsense. And she said, show us the GPS coordinates. Now they've admitted they haven't built a single mile, not a single mile of new fence. They've been out there repairing existing fences, which don't amount to much, as we've seen, and painting them. We can have the military down there painting a fence, but we can't even build any new fence. Not allowed to do that. Not allowed to stop people coming across the border. They want to have that crisis. And now you've got Republicans that are begging for E-Verify. Please give us a number. Identify each of us with a number from the federal government so that we can beg the federal government for the privilege to work. That is what E-Verify is. It is the mark of the beast. Just like Mark of the Beast Zuckerberg's Libra cryptocurrency. They're going to get it by hook or by crook. They've got so many different ways that they're corralling us into that particular aspect where they will have us beg them for everything that we do to participate in finances one way or the other. But let's play this clip from Rand Paul as he pushes back because he talked about trying to fund this massive new entitlement program. Here's Rand Paul.
But it's worse than that, Neil. It's not $10.2 billion over 10 years. It's about $2 billion a year every year until 2092. There is no limit. This is the thing. This bill is completely irresponsible. You know what it says for how much money we're going to spend? Such sums as are necessary. So if John Stewart could read, maybe he'd read the bill and say, oh, my God, who in their right mind would vote for a bill that doesn't have a dollar amount in it? It has no dollar amount.
But there's no way of knowing, right? Isn't that part of the problem? Because there was no way to forecast these illnesses and sicknesses that came as a result.
We do this on disasters, too. So we just make up an enormous number. What you would do if you're responsible is you'd allocate it for 3, 4, 5 years and come back and reassess it. That's a responsible way to budget. But to have an open-ended thing that goes to 2092, really? We're going to have a spending bill that says you spend whatever you want until 2092. It doesn't matter how good the cause is. It's irresponsible. And really, people need to wake up and not be so sort of overwhelmed by celebrity that they take out-and-out falsehoods and ad hominem attacks from really a gutter snipe like John Stewart.
All right, but
all right, exactly right. Well, we don't know what it's going to be. And as Rand Paul said, so you allocate a large amount of money, you make sure that you pay for it by taking money from somewhere else, and then you reevaluate it down the road. But that's not reasonable. We'll be right back.
American Dream. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Welcome back. You know, slavery reparations are all the rage in the Democrat Party right now, the candidates at the top. We got to find some way to compensate people. If they believe, and I don't know how we're going to prove this, if they believe they had ancestors that were slaves 150 years ago or so. And yet, they're doing this because they don't want you to see the slavery that you're under right now. As I said many times, you know, there was the chattel slavery of black people who were captured by Muslims in Africa, put on British ships, and then there was that circular trade where they would drop them off and then pick up the goods that the slaves had processed, the agricultural goods throughout the South and the Caribbean. And send that back, the cotton, the sugar, these things, okay, that circular trade route. And then the people who kept them on their plantations here and in the Caribbean, And so it was a horrendous situation. But we also had a lot of people who came over prior to that happening. They had a lot of people who were indentured servants. They were poor. They wanted to get out of the unfree lands that they were living in Europe, and they wanted to come to America where they could eventually be free, but they didn't have any money to get here. So they would go into debt for passage, and they would be indentured slaves. Now, unlike the chattel slavery of the black slaves that were captured, they could eventually work their way out. Their children were not born as slaves and kept in slavery. But indentured servitude was the first slavery that we had here in the United States, not counting what the Indians were doing to each other, because every culture has had that. The Indians, the Native Americans that were here, the Aztecs, the Incans, they had slavery. They enslaved each other. They had human sacrifices as well. So this is not something that is unique to white Western culture by any means, but that's what we're being told. That's not to defend it. Well, everybody's doing it. Everybody murders, everybody steals, everybody does a lot of things that we don't defend. But it is not the problem of one culture and one people. That is the lie that's being sold by the Democrat Party in order to get elected, in order to divide this country. Slavery reparations. Well, let me tell you where we are going. We're going into, we've all become essentially indentured servants. As I pointed out, nobody is talking about the debt. Just a few of us who are not part of the corporate media. Jonathan Turley is talking about it over the weekend. I talked about it last week. His title is Debtor Nation. Both Trump and the Democrats pile on debt to a crippling deficit. This is the issue that nobody wants to talk about. This is the issue that if you've got somebody like Rand Paul that says, okay, yeah, I don't have a problem with this, but we do this all the time. We've got to figure out a way to pay for this. You want to help people that are victims of 9/11? You want to help people who are disaster relief? Let's figure out where we're going to take this money from, because we can't just run the printing presses. And then the rest of the Washington establishment says, well, yes, you can. And you're an absolute Grinch and a Scrooge if you don't run the printing presses. Well, the printing presses are running us into slavery and into debt and into a future hyperinflation. As Jonathan Turley says, both parties have torn balanced budget limits to shreds as they throw hundreds of billions of dollars around like they were sound bites. The Congressional Budget Office is now projected that debt could reach 92% of gross domestic product within 10 years. In other words, an economic meltdown caused by politicians who act like children in spending without any notion of how we will actually pay for these programs. Exactly right. He says, what is most disturbing is that the CBO, Congressional Budget Office, released its projections and nobody cared. Nobody cared. Nobody covered it. Who cares? We got MMT. It's so much shinier and new than old Keynesian economics. You know, that idea that the debt doesn't matter because it's money that you owe yourself, except that it's money that you owe the Chinese. It's money that you owe the Saudis. And eventually, when you abuse that power of having the world's reserve currency, the world gets angry. And the world turns, and the world takes away that power that you have abused. There was virtually no coverage, and members of Congress and the White House are joined in avoiding the subject of our crippling runaway debt. And they are joined by their friends in the corporate media. The corporate media friends of the Democrats, CNN, MSNBC, etc., Washington Post, New York Times, they don't want to talk about it. The corporate friends of the Republican Party, Fox News, doesn't want to talk about it either. As he pointed out, debt would reach 92% of GDP by the end of the next decade, said the Congressional Budget Office, and 144% by 2049. And as Rand Paul, who is being attacked all over social media for saying, how are we going to pay for this? You're saying, we will spend whatever sums are needed for this. We don't know. It's open-ended. And we're not even going to put a dollar figure on it for a couple of years and see how that works out and raise it if necessary. No, we're not going to do that. We're just going to say till 2092, we're going to spend whatever sums are necessary. Who cares? We got the magic, the modern monetary theory, which I call the magic money theory. And This is the way that we're going. And the way that we're going is into slavery. So here's Bernie Sanders. And these Democrats have tens of trillions of dollars, you know, $40 trillion here for this program, $60 trillion there for that program. Let's give everybody raises. Happy days are here again. And one day we're going to wake up from that D-A-Z-E and we're going to see what's going on with us. But take a look at the hypocrisy of Bernie Sanders, for example. You know, he's out there pushing $15 an hour, but he's not paying his own staffers $15 an hour. Instead, we put them on a fixed salary. And supposedly they're working for 40 hours a week, but they're actually working 60 hours a week plus. And so he's not paying them overtime either, I guess. So they worked it out that they're making like $11 to $13 an hour working for Bernie Sanders. And as Bernie Sanders is tweeting out, there's nothing extreme about raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour. What's extreme is paying workers starvation wages while CEO pay and corporate profits skyrocket. Stop blocking a raise for millions of Americans. And he pays his people $11 to $13 an hour instead of the $15 that he says should be the minimum. This guy, who, as I remind you, as many people on Twitter reminded you, owns three homes. And so his solution was, wait for it, we'll cut their hours. Now, isn't this what always happens when you raise minimum wage? We always say, you know, what's going to happen is, there because of economics, because Bernie Sanders doesn't have the ability yet, he's not present yet, to print money to pay people, he's actually got to have a budget. And like every businessman who has a budget, you realize that if somebody just arbitrarily comes in and raises the cost of your wages, you have to make that up somewhere. So you're going to have to cut the hours or cut the workers or replace them with something. And so what he did was he came up with the option of cutting the number of hours. As these discussions continue, we're limiting hours so no employee is receiving less than $15 an hour for hours worked. That's what he said. And then he says it really bothers him. Really bothers him. These people going outside to process, going to the media, that's really not acceptable. These would be called, Bernie, whistleblowers. Whistleblowers about you. And, of course, that is not acceptable. They want to lock up anybody that makes them look bad. They want to ban anything that they don't like. And one person point out, cutting employees' working hours in order to afford higher wages? Who could have possibly seen this coming? Next week, he'll be replacing most of his staff with robots and kiosks. That would probably be an improvement. He's probably got a lot of bots working on him for him on social media. But that's the hypocrisy. When we come back, we're going to give you a list of what the Communist Party USA, Democrats, same thing, what they want to abolish. It's a long list. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You know, Bernie's not paying his staffers $15, so he'll have to cut out. Or as one individual said, maybe replace them with kiosks or robots because you just can't invent money out of thin air unless you are the federal government, in which case you can print it until people catch on to the Ponzi scheme and shut it down. And there's a lot of governments around the world that are talking exactly about doing that. People who do not like the power that not having any kind of budget gives us. We've been able to spend money like that to the point that it's no longer talked about. And if you are anyone like Rand Paul who questions profligate spending, you are demonized. You know, they called him everything but racist, but I'm sure that's going to come along as well. I mean, that's the next thing to drop, right? But let's take a look at what they want to abolish. We have Bernie Sanders, who's now saying we had to abolish the Electoral College. It's not the first time that we've had this kind of call, and he's not the first Democrat to want to do this, because anything that gets in their way, that is perceived to be in their way, they call to ban or to abolish it if they got plans. Ocasio-Cortez, AOC, Nobody is heartbroken, she said, at the prospect of losing private health insurance. So just get rid of it. It's in our way. Why? They want to control all of our health care. Single payer means that you've got a single provider, ultimately. The person paying for it is going to be calling the shots one way or the other. And so they want to put all of our health care under centralized government control. What could possibly go wrong with that? Now, let's just take a look at all the different things that they want to abolish. The Electoral College, private insurance, private health care. They want to abolish the border. They want to abolish the Border Patrol and immigration law enforcement. Any speech that offends them, that must be abolished. Any speech that they can't handle or they can't dispute, any political speech, they label it hateful, racist, and they abolish it. Private gun ownership, that must be abolished. Now, note, guns will not be abolished. Now, the government will still have guns. The gangs will still have guns. We will just be the unarmed peons, as depicted at the beginning of The Magnificent Seven. That's the way that we will be left under the Democrat communist rule. They want to ban private colleges because, you know, they're going to pay for everybody's college tuition. That means that all schooling up to the college level will be under the control of the government. They will define it. They will define what education means. They will define what is taught. They will define what you can say. And it's not looking too good on college campuses right now with these Marxists in charge. They are the ones who have invented this postmodern idiocy, followed up and exacerbated by intersectionality, pitting one group against another group. And they don't tolerate any discussion. Any debate is not tolerated. So that's something else they want to ban. They want to ban private cars and private transportation. They want to ban meat. They want to ban privacy. They're going to know everything that you do. They want to get rid of informed consent. Hey, we got Democrats everywhere mandating vaccines. You're not allowed to know anything about that. We don't want people talking to you about abortion and the dangers of abortion, what it really means. Now, we've got an agenda that we're going to push on you, and don't you dare talk back about that. As a matter of fact, social media, Twitter, you know, the new Twitter. There's a new Twitter coming, they keep telling us. It's like, well, I'm not too happy with the old Twitter, actually. I think the new one is going to be a lot worse. But they're going to really clamp down on anybody that's talking about things like being pro-life. You oppose abortion? Well, they're going to oppose you on social media. It is anti-social. They are propaganda sites. Google is a propaganda site. It's a so-called search engine that is hiding information from you and pushing other information to you. Affordable energy, again, that has to be banned. Comedy has to be banned. I talked about this last week, and I put up a video. Some guy, oh, yeah, here's this guy. He's an expert on comedy. He's going to tell us that comedy is banned. Well, you might want to listen to Mel Brooks. 5 years ago, he was saying, I couldn't do any of these movies. Like Blazing Saddles, The Producers, Springtime for Hitler. I couldn't do any of that stuff today. Monty Python people have all said that. John Cleese has said it. Rowan Atkinson has said it. Jay Leno has. Every comedian knows that. I mean, even Seinfeld said, yeah, I don't know. It's kind of risky doing comedy anymore. You know, even a guy who is a hardcore Democrat is getting antsy about doing comedy. And now they're coming for drama. And, of course, let's not forget the plastic straws, the toilet paper. That's on a new one on the list. And most importantly, we got to ban white people and males. See, this political correctness that we've been talking about, we called it, and it really made them angry. You know, when you're over the target when they get really angry and they start trying to ban your speech. Well, we call them cultural Marxists because that's what they are. They're trying to use Marxist tactics to manipulate and engineer our culture. And, of course, the Marxist tactics are you get rid of merit, you rank everybody by political power, and you assign political power to different groups, and you pit all these different groups against each other, so you've got a constant struggle, and you divide and conquer the population. It's classic Marxism. And back in the 1940s, they were talking in the Communist Party. They had documents, as J. Edward Griffin pointed out. Look, they're going to accuse anybody that they don't like of being racist. They're going to present themselves as anti-fascist, and then they're going to associate you with reprehensible groups. And even though none of that stuff is true, it'll become true because they'll repeat it over and over and over and over again. That is the playbook. They don't deviate from the playbook. You know, take a look at the ban on cheap energy, for example. Because we have a heat wave, and oh, they're making a lot out of that heat wave. On Friday after the show, CJ came in and said, is there anything in the AP style book? You know, I talked just on Friday about the AP style book and how there are certain terms they will not allow to be used. Pro-life. So-called pro-life, and you put it in quotes. Cannot use that. You must use the term anti-abortion rights. Can't use the term, of course, illegal alien. Must use the term, cannot use the term anchor baby. On and on and on. Can't talk about a semi-automatic rifle. No, it has to be a military-style assault rifle. They have these style sheets put out by the Associated Press, as I said on Friday. Are they? Should we call them not the Associated Press, but the Associated Propaganda? Because that's the way they win the arguments. They silence you, and then they label things, so they make sure that they've got the high ground in any so-called debate. But they don't really let you have a debate anyway. They silence the other side. And as they were pushing this on Friday, all of this stuff, look at all the temperatures across the country. And CJ came in and goes, they have something in the style sheets where they say, don't report the temperatures, report the heat index, because that's what you see everywhere. He said, look at this. They're saying and if you look at these reports, they say, oh, look, it's 107 here and it's 110 here and so forth. And then up in the corner, they'll say heat index, not air temperature. And so they're reporting 107 here locally, when the air temperature was 97. But, you know, the weather fluctuates. But as they're looking at brownouts, guess where? All these places where they have banned cheap, affordable energy. It always happens. It always happens. Anywhere there's socialism, whether they're banning it because they want something that is quote-unquote clean, and, of course, you can make fossil fuels clean. That's not the issue. The issue is that they don't want you to have affordable energy. And so now this is happening in New York, and they're very angry. First with the mayor, now with the governor. It's Democrats. It's socialists. It's communists that are doing this to people. As I said, Mel Brooks is saying, you know, he can't do Blazing Saddles anymore. Absolutely couldn't. Over the weekend, you know, here's another thing they don't want you to have. They talk about in the abortion debate all the time. Well, health freedom. I want health freedom. I want choice. I'm pro-choice. No, you're not. You don't want people to be informed. You don't want people to have health choices. You want to silence anybody who's talking about that. You want to ram that down their throats. We had at the Comic Con in San Diego, a bunch of people, the theme was V for Vendetta, an anti-authoritarian film. Well, that'd be the time for people to come out and talk about how authoritarian. You can see this at Infowars.com, some B-roll of Comic-Con. They were coming out and trying to raise awareness of how authoritarian the vaccine mandates in California are. And I've got an update about that from RFK Jr. when we come back. We're about to go to break, folks. I just want to tell you before we do, remind you that we still have the 1776 Worldwide Special up as part of our 34-hour broadcast. We have reduced many of our most popular products to $17.76. That represents at least a 10% discount. For some items, that is a 75% discount. Things like Brain Force Plus, Ultra 12, our vitamin B12 formula, Survival Shield X2 and X3 nascent iodine, our Super Silver Wound Dressing Gel with Nano Silver. We have Winter Sun Plus, our vitamin D formula, Silver Bullet, our colloidal silver formula, many, many other products, 1776, all of our shirts and hats, 1776, InfoWarsStore.com. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. Up in Boston, CBS is telling us that the police are kind of... actually, they haven't banned this comedy. Most comedy has been banned because of political correctness, but the police are still able to tweet out and say, hold off on crime this weekend. It's too hot. It's too hot. Now, you know that it's dangerous when the heat is telling you it's too hot. Drop that donut. You're under cardiac arrest. That's basically what they're telling people. You know, one of the things they said, stay home, blast the air conditioning, and binge Stranger Things season 3. Well, I've seen the first episode and a half of season 3 of Stranger Things, and I think I would rather have a heat stroke than sit through that stuff again. Not my cup of tea. But as I was saying, they're putting out all of this, they're creating a heat wave hysteria using heat index rather than temperatures for the most part. But yes, the temperatures are higher in some areas of the country. And as What's Up With That has pointed out, we've made it to mid-July, and we are just now having our first major heat wave of the season here in the United States. I was thanking God for the unseasonably cool weather that we've had here in Austin up to this point. It was delayed for quite a bit. Many times hot weather begins as early as May here. And here we are mid-July, late July. A massive ridge of high pressure was built up over the southeast, which is dominating weather conditions almost everywhere east of the Rockies. And as this person points out, who is a weather aficionado, I don't know if he's a meteorologist or what he is, but he follows it very closely. He says, most people, even those who aren't fascinated by weather like me, understand that normal weather rarely happens. It's usually one extreme or the other. It's usually hot or cold. It's warm or cool. Extremes are for a single location for a single day, and they end up averaging out numerically over a period of time. And it also happens that as you look at this map, he says, as all weather forecasters should know, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. In other words, for every place that there's a warm anomaly, there are other places on the United States that have cool anomalies, and you can see it on the map there. If these climate activists took note of equilibrium, they wouldn't be fretting over this heat wave, simply because there's a reasonably cool temperatures that are relative to average out further west on the very far west and northwest to balance it all out in the total picture. And yet, you have the people in New York, as I pointed out, they're panicking over this, and rightfully so. 50,000 people, Con Ed customers, without power, without air conditioning. They said that it was blamed for at least 6 deaths. And I don't think that that's an exaggeration. As I said many times, cheap, affordable energy is not only a prerequisite for a nice lifestyle. It also is a prerequisite for having life expectancy. It definitely affects your life expectancy, not just your lifestyle or your standard of living. You've had situations, this has been the case for a long time. As soon as they started austerity programs in Germany, artificially hiking up, this is the government doing this to discourage people from using energy. Well, we'll make it too expensive for them to do that. And you had pensioners in Germany who couldn't afford the heating bills, and so they would cut back on it, and they had a lot of elderly people who died because of that. And now what is happening in New York, because they have banned affordable energy, and in so doing that, they have banned energy production. They've demanded you're going to have to produce energy from the sources that we like and from the companies. You're going to have to buy it from the companies that we like. See, that's the important thing. It isn't that you can't make fossil fuels clean. It's that they want you to buy from their new companies so they can make the money. And so they tell you what the source of energy has to be. And by doing that, they've effectively banned the energy production. Now, they'll tell you that it's man-made global warming. I'm telling you that it is man-made energy shortages that are responsible for these people's deaths. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. As the people in New York, in Occasional Cortex's district, Alexandria and Wonderland, creator of the Green New Deal, as they're getting the Green New Deal good and hard with blackouts up there. You know, these people leave it to you to sweat the details. Exactly what this Green New Deal is going to look at like, and we know exactly what it's going to look like. Destroying your standard of living, destroying many people's lives is what it's essentially going to result in. It's going to result in power outages, which are going to cost lives. They're having blackouts now across the New York area because they have said, we're not going to allow you to produce energy from certain sources. And these are politicians. They're not engineers. They don't have any solutions. They don't have any way to produce this. They just demand that you not use what is cheap and available and clean. They want you to use their friends' new business to produce energy. That's what this is all about. That's all it's about. This is just socialism and communism exercising their dominance over people. And now they've got a new thing that they're focusing on again. Toilet paper. They are coming for your toilet paper and trying to ban toilet paper, telling us that it's resulting in the destruction of forests. Well, you know, forests to grow paper, it is a recyclable. You want to talk about things that are sustainable, that are recyclable? They plant the trees. The trees grow. They cut the trees down. They plant them again. It's kind of funny how that works out. It's kind of like a crop or something. These people have never gotten outside of a city. They've never gotten outside, actually, of an educational institution. They've been institutionalized their entire lives, and so they don't know the difference. But I can understand that in California, you know, people are developing a comfort with people going to the restroom without toilets, the benefit of toilets. They've gone back to the days of old. You know, that poem, in days of old, nights were bold before toilets were invented. People in California are doing it now. They drop their load along the road and go away contented. Well, that's what they want us all to do. And they're going to make sure that you do that. They're going to, you know, when we went to China, it was something of a of an issue there in China for the Communist Party. It was an embarrassment to them that Westerners would go to China at the time and that it was very common for people to just go to the bathroom on the sidewalk. And Westerners were talking about it and laughing about it. And so the Communist Party was getting very angry about that. As a matter of fact, they'd put their young kids on their shoulder without any diapers or pants. It's very common to see that happening. And if the kid had to go, you would train them to the point where they would let you know so that you could get them off your shoulders and put them on the street curb. You'd curb your kid. And they were saying, yeah, we gotta get to toilets. And actually, the toilets were just in their infancy. They had figured out that you needed a hole in the ground, but they hadn't figured out that piece of equipment that was invented by Crapper decades ago in the Victorian, 100 years ago or so in the West. They hadn't figured that out yet. And so that made for some very distressing events when we were in China. And as we got into some of the areas where they did have modern toilets, my wife was showing our adopted daughter, who didn't speak English, and she was almost 5 years old when we adopted her. And she was very excited about the advent of toilet paper. Now you have these Marxists here in the United States who want to take that away. As a matter of fact, when we landed in the U.S., my daughter went into one of the restrooms and they had one of the giant rolls of industrial toilet paper and she grabbed it and ran over to my wife and mama, look at this. Like I have hit the land of milk and honey and toilet paper. This is, this is beyond belief. This is the biggest roll of toilet paper I've ever seen. Yeah, this place is great. But they're going to take that away from us. This is the Democrats who want to take this away from us. I mean, we've had many articles about how this has become an epidemic and really is a health issue in California. And it's the homeless issue. It's the fact that people are living on the streets, that people are doing everything on the street. It's creating issues in L.A. It's created issues in Nancy Pelosi's hometown. They've got a map, an app for that, where you can see, you know, report where you find human excrement on the sidewalk. And now these people want to get rid of toilet paper. President Trump is taking on these idiots. They have focused on plastic straws, of course. And again, it was based on the back of the napkin calculations of a 9-year-old. This whole freak out about plastic straws. And this was really big about a year ago when they had Earth Day 2018. I talked about it extensively then. It was a 9-year-old who came up with these figures and said, you know, a young boy, you know, acting like Elizabeth Warren, like I know better than you, nanny Elizabeth Warren. And it's like, I can't believe how much plastic is being used. And there's plastic in the ocean. Therefore, these two things must be related. And we got to stop the straws. And people pointed out, you know, those big floating masses of plastic that became the poster child, if you will, for Earth Day 2018. They were losing the battle over climate change, global warming, global cooling, whatever. You know, it's now a climate emergency, but they're losing the battle over that. They're losing the science over that. So they had to go back to where they originally started, which was talking about pollution. So they chose the floating plastic masses that you see over in the Pacific Ocean. The only problem is that those masses of floating plastic are garbage that's just being dumped by China and some other Asian countries. None of that is coming from the United States. And so, however, in their mind, in the mind of the 9-year-old and other people, we must ban plastic straws in the United States as the beginning of banning all plastic. President Trump has taken that on. He says, I do think we have bigger problems than plastic straws. What about the plates, the wrappers, everything else that are much bigger, and they're made out of the same material? And so now, and this is one of the things that President Trump does best, taking on the idiocy and the political correctness and the lies that they try to use to control us, taking it on directly in a direct confrontation. He's done that now with plastic straws. Trump's 2020 campaign is now going to be selling its own plastic straws to replace, quote, liberal paper straws. They are going, you can get a pack of 10 BPA free. I mean, they're friendly to humans. No BPA. 10 BPA free plastic straws for $15. The straws are laser engraved with Trump's name. But as of Friday, they had sold out. Perfect way to combat this. And then listen to the left. David Frum, who has always been an ever-Trumper, he was one of these establishment Republicans that you couldn't tell the difference between these guys and the Democrats. They were Republican in name only. David Frum was a speechwriter for George W. Bush. He is now an editor for The Atlantic. And he comes out and says, oh, sea turtles. You don't care about sea turtles, President Trump. I guess they're underrepresented in the Electoral College. Oh, the sea turtles can't vote for you, so you're going to kill them. This is the insanity of the, and this is the establishment Republican Party. People like David Frum. This is the mentality. These are the lies that they're telling people. But then we had President Trump also get involved over a Twitter suspension. And it was a situation where one of the angel moms, as a matter of fact, this is Marianne Mendoza. She heads the Angel Families Organization. Her son, a 32-year-old police officer, Brandon Mendoza, was killed in May 2014 by a drunk illegal alien driving the wrong way down the highway in Mesa, Arizona. And so she's now the head of the Angel Families Organization. She was suspended from Twitter because she posted about illegal immigration. Oh, don't use those terms. See, you can't. Illegal immigration, that's just a hateful term. The Associated Press has told us you don't use that term. You know, these are just new citizens that are here. But she tweeted Kamala Harris, said, what law can I break and have you defend me so staunchly? Provide me sanctuary. From which laws are you going to provide me? And for that, she was taken off of Twitter. We'll tell you what happened when we come back. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I was just saying that Twitter suspended Marianne Mendoza, who is the head of the Angel Families Organization. She said hateful but truthful things. There was nothing at all hateful about it. She pointed out the truth, and they call that hateful because they hate the truth. She tweeted to Kamala Harris and said, what law can I break and have you defend me so staunchly? Her son was killed by an illegal alien. his law enforcement officer. She said, provide me, what law can I break and have you provide me sanctuary? Political cleanup from your inaction for decades is what is called. You have blood on your hands for every death of an American killed by an illegal alien criminal that you are protecting. And then she also tweeted out to another individual, said, fighting for illegal aliens one case at a time. She said, the demise of our country from within. Where were you when American families need representation when their loved ones are killed by illegal aliens? You work pro bono for illegals, but nothing at all for Americans. Which, again, takes us back to where we began the program. These people who care so much about child separations, and we know that many of these children are being brought across the border by cartels, trafficking them, and that many of these children wind up in prostitution as slaves. But we're not allowed to detain them, even in a summer camp environment. And it was even the Associated Press that said this is more of a summer camp than a concentration camp. We're not allowed to detain them and to verify that there is even a genetic component here. We don't know who the adults are. We don't know who the children are. They come here without any identification whatsoever. But according to the Democrats, we're supposed to just let them in. We're not supposed to do any health tests. Even in the days when we had wide open immigration at Ellis Island, they would quarantine people to check for health. Can you imagine if we did that today? Oh, no, can't hold them to look for health issues. No, no, no. Not going to be allowed to do that. Not going to be allowed to look after the welfare of the children. Even if it is their parents have recklessly endangered these kids. It's far worse what they do, dragging them across Central and South America and making that dangerous border crossing with all the drug cartels and the violent cartels that are there. That's far more dangerous than you or I putting our children in a car without a car seat. And yet, look at what they do to parents that they find without their kids in a car seat. But they look the other way. And if anything happens to these children as they're being recklessly endangered by their own family or being put in the care of cartels to cross the border, the Democrats go apoplectic about that. While they threaten to take children away, 1,000 parents got a letter threatening to have their kids taken away and put in foster care because the school district was owed $20,000 on free lunches. That's about $20 on average each. And they said, well, you know, four of those families owe $450 each. So that means a lot of those families owe less than $20 and still had a threat of having their children taken away from them. This is the issue. So because she put out some of those statements, saying 4,300 Americans are killed every year by illegal aliens in the U.S. What do you have to say about that? Never again to the people who are out there saying, well, you know, we got Nazi concentration camps at the border and so forth. So because of that, Twitter shut her down. And then President Trump tweeted that he was going to help her with her situation. He took it on directly. He said, I will help angel mom and great woman Marianne Mendoza with Twitter. I know Marianne from the beginning, and she should never be silenced. She is a winner who has lost so much, her child. Twitter, if you're watching, please do what you have to do now. And so they restored her account. And I'm glad that they did. But when I look at this, I also see the same at the same time that Google just blacklisted Gab's app off of the Google Play Store. Now, I have changed. I have always been a fan. I was in the past when Steve Jobs ran Apple. I was a big fan of Apple products. I bought the first Mac back in 1984 just because as an engineer, I wanted to take a look at the inside and how to program it. And I did use it in my business, and I built my own database because nobody was doing any business software. I built my own database. Relational database to use in as a point of sale terminal on it. But so I've always been a big Apple fan. I bought the iPhone on the first day that it was released. I didn't have to stand in a long line at that point in time. It was before it was really that popular as it is today. But I left Apple after Apple led the boycott of InfoWars, after Apple took the InfoWars app, news app, off of its store when we were ranked number one in terms of news apps on the Apple Store. They banned us. And now Google is doing the same thing. I switched over to Android, and now The censorship is starting on Android platform, on the Google playlist. Where is President Trump on this? I understand that it's wrong what they did to one individual. And President Trump needs to understand that this is a problem that is bigger than him and his friends. And obviously, we're no friend of President Trump. He has been completely AWOL in this issue. You know, whether it is Gab, I mean, President Trump, if President Trump wants free speech on the internet, the best thing he could do would be to leave Twitter completely and go to Gab. Everybody would follow him there. Everybody would be reporting on what he did. Instead, he ignores it. And he has a phony social media event at the White House with big conservative think tanks like the Heritage Foundation to tell us, no, it's nothing at all, no problem. Oh, they're reforming themselves. That's what they said at the social media conference as they, you know, within the next week, we see Gab app taken down. We see this mother who is head of the Angel Moms taken down by Twitter. We don't need President Trump to come in and intervene on a one-by-one basis. We need his Justice Department to understand that this is torturous interference. We need his Justice Department to understand that this is monopoly action. We need his Federal Election Commission to understand that this is tampering with the elections. And there needs to be an understanding that this is stealing from each and every one of us, not just somebody who happens to know him personally and has a big political organization that can reward him in the campaign, but each and every one of you who wants to talk about politics, who wants to see information as this was happening. I tweeted out on my disappearing Twitter account, and it is disappearing. I still have the same number of followers. They have fixed it. No matter, every time it goes up, they take it back down. I saw an example of it as this was happening. I've mentioned before, Twitter has harangued my wife over and over again, telling her, you can stop notifications from your husband, you know, David Knight. You can stop those notifications. And why don't you follow Alexandria Occasional Cortex? Well, she kept ignoring those things and dismissing them. And finally, they had her unfollow me. They did it for her. And I see this happening all the time. I don't see many of the big accounts that I follow. And I notice that the people that seem to be seeing me are new people or people who have 50 to 100 accounts. It seems like they have put some kind of a block on anybody that's got a certain number of followers. If you want to follow, you'll have to go there and search it out specifically because they're not going to pass the content along to you. Just a matter of time before they take it off altogether. Libertarian, follow, retweet. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Welcome back. You know, it was about, I don't know, a year and a half, 2 years ago that I first interviewed Simon Roche. And he is in South Africa talking about the problems in South Africa, the race problems, the race war that is being fostered by the Marxists who have taken over that country. It presages what is going on here in the United States and what Pete Buttigieg is actually pushing towards. He says, white supremacy threatens to end the United States. And I was confused when I saw that headline because I thought what this Marxist was fighting, because make no doubt about it, Buttigieg's father is Marxist, his Harvard mentor was a Marxist, and they all believe that all the problems, at least they said, they thought all the problems in America were because of white supremacy. So white supremacy, according to them, started America. But now Buttigieg is saying white supremacy is going to end America. But they're putting all this in the context of reparations. And that is the way that the communist Marxists in South Africa are moving, putting this in the context of reparations. Because of past injustices, they say, they are entitled to steal and to kill, if you resist them stealing your property, anybody that they want to take property from, especially the white people. Of course, you've had some other tribes that are there. The Zulus said, once they kill the white people and take their land, they're going to be coming for ours as well. And so I wanted to get an update from Simon Roche, because as I interviewed him a year and a half, 2 years ago, it got traction. We had some corporate media take a look at the violence that was happening in South Africa for a short period of time. But then, as they always do, the corporate media moves on in the news cycle, and they're ignoring what is happening. And it is, I believe, only intensifying there. So joining us now is Simon Roche. And again, you can find out information on their website and how you can help them and how you can find out how this is going to look in the future here in the United States. Sudlanders.org, SUIDLANDERS, Sudlanders.org. Thank you for joining us, Simon.
Thank you very much for having us, Mr. Knight.
Give us an update. I always want to know what's happening there, because I really do believe that South Africa is the pattern, the Marxist pattern for what's going to be happening in the future. But tell us, give us an update since we last talked. What is the condition there? Is it the same, or is it better or worse?
Well, we held elections on the 8th of May this year, and they went off without incident, as we fully expected that they would, because the revolutionaries could not afford at this particular point in time not to have a mandate to continue with their agenda. So it wasn't in their interest to cause trouble over that period. But immediately after the elections, in other words, from the 9th of May onwards, we've had a massive increase in the rate of farm attacks and farm murders on white farmers in rural areas. We've also had it revealed that there is a plot, a credible plot, to assassinate our president by our former president and his lackeys. And indeed, one of our most senior intelligence service personnel has just disappeared off the face of the earth. He was one of those people leading that plot, apparently. So it looks as if our current president got the knives in first. And a few days ago, we had the army deployed to 12 townships in and around Cape Town because the police simply cannot control the crime and the violence in those townships. And that came almost simultaneous to the release of a report saying that our police are amongst the most corrupt institutions in the whole of Africa, and indeed the most corrupt institution in South Africa. And it wasn't a day, but a day or two after that, that some statistics were released. We just crossed the 500,000 murders threshold from the past of the past 25 years of freedom and democracy in the new South African Rainbow Nation, as they call it. 500 odd thousand murders, and that equals currently about 36 murders per day across the country. For white farmers, it's about 145 per 100,000, so a far higher rate than anywhere else in the world.
Whoa. And remind it now, I wasn't following the election, and I'm sure most people in the United States were not following it. As a result of this election, I mean, we've had politicians in the past chanting, kill the white man, kill the Boer, and so forth. In which direction did the country move with these elections?
The country moved leftward. The populist rhetoric of these crazy Marxists, you know, they say the most bizarre things, but somehow it's resonant in certain people's minds. So we moved slightly leftward, not tremendously, but there was a shift. And the most prominent of the kind of half-sensible opposition parties lost a lot of traction.
Remind us again of some of these statistics. You were talking about how massive the murder rate was. You just mentioned that overall in South Africa, and how much higher it is for the white farmers. And that is still escalating, I imagine.
Yes, that's correct, Mr. Knight. You know, the murder rate in Europe is between one and two people per 100,000. It was historically about one per 100,000, and it is going on for having doubled over the past few years, given the massive increase in knife crime in the inner cities of Europe. So call it about two per 100,000 people per annum. In the United States of America, it's 4.88 per 100,000 people per annum. In South Africa, on average, it's about 36 per 100,000 people per annum. But amongst white farmers, as has been revealed by a number of groups such as AfriForum, the Institute for Security Studies, and one other, it is closer to 145 per 100,000 per annum. And that Wow. is significantly greater than the rate of fatality of American soldiers at any point in time in Afghanistan and Iraq. And it is greater than the mortality rate in the civil wars occurring in Libya, Somalia, and Yemen. So that's just indicative of a phenomenal mathematical aberration, if you like, that is more or less being overlooked by the world.
It's just mind-boggling. And yet, when we go in and we look at what is being said now by the Democrat Party, and it was before they began all this talk about reparations that you and I began talking about this, and I said, this is where that we're going in the United States. You agreed with me. And now we have pretty much all the Democrat candidates are coming out for reparations. They're talking about civil war. They're talking about violence. Buttigieg just had this to say. It will not be enough to replace racist systems and racist policies with neutral policies. If we are not actively, proactively, yes, affirmatively reversing these harms, then my generation, too, will be held to account with our failure to control the system. So he's saying that in the context of demanding reparations, taking property away from people, which is the underlying logic, if you will, the excuse that is behind these attacks on white farmers in South Africa, saying, you stole the land, now we're going to take it back, and we will kill you if necessary to take this land back. And now you've got all the Democrat candidates here in the United States essentially saying the same thing. America was founded on racism and slavery, they said, and they're going to take that back from us by whatever means they need to. We are following down the same path that they that you have gone in South Africa. Your comments.
Well, there are no two ways about it. You know, I often say to people from the United States and Europe that we're no wiser than you are, but we have watched this movie before. Therefore, we know how it ends. And the simple reality is that the United States is falling into the trap of believing this goody-goody, fluffy, lovely stuff. I mean, it sounds ever so wonderful, which has no basis in fact, that was similarly foisted on us. People
yes.
are believing.
We got to take a quick break. We're going to be right back. Simon Roche, Suidlanders.org, Suidlanders.org. We'll talk about the Marxist origins of their revolution that parallel ours. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We're talking to Simon Roche out of South Africa. He's warning us where we're heading. They are experiencing it right now. You want to know where all this talk from the Democrat Marxists like Buttigieg is going to lead? It's going to lead to a civil war. He said it's a new civil war that we're talking about here. We're going to have to proactively reverse these harms, reparations. And if we don't do it, it's going to be a civil war. Well, his rhetoric is not new. As a matter of fact, it's very old. And as I pointed out for you on Friday, G. Edward Griffin, back in 1969, was not a prophet. But he was reading, actually, from the Marxist playbook at the time. He had a 13-year-old Marxist document. He was reading this. And I want you to hear exactly what their plan was 13 years before he put that out, going back to the mid-1950s. And this is what G. Edward Griffin warned us about. Listen, if this doesn't... Antifa, they're going to be anti-fascist and so forth. They're going to label people as racist and on and on and on. The playbook, 50 years ago, read by G. Edward Griffin.
In 1943, the following directive was issued from party headquarters to all communists in the United States. It read, when certain obstructionists become too irritating, label them after suitable buildups as fascist or Nazi or anti-Semitic, and use the prestige of anti-fascist and tolerance organizations to discredit them. In the public mind, constantly associate those who oppose us with those names which already have a bad smell. The association will, after enough repetition, become fact in the public mind.
There you go. That was from 1969. Simon, As you have lived through this now, you've seen these same types of things that are now being done here in America. That was 50 years ago. We were told about that. That was a document that at the time was 13 years old. You've seen this happen. The ANC, they're Marxists, right? And they, you were an ANC supporter at one point in time because you opposed racism. And they use these lies to draw people into this situation. And they weren't serious about ending that at all. They were just using that, as we were warned by G. Edward Griffin. They were using the idea of racism. You oppose that because you're a Christian. And so that struck a chord with you. You didn't realize what their real agenda was until they got power. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. That's an ideal summary of what transpired with me. And, of course, since then, we've seen more and more clearly that there is really just one agenda here. That is an assault on the Christ, you know, the very similar attacks on traditional Western European-derived culture around the world are really intended to erode some kind of godliness at the core. And you see recurring indications of that all over the show. I'll give you one example which may seem slightly tangential, but recently we had two particularly brutal farm attacks in which a farmer was accosted at his gate as he took his daughter to school and forced to watch as his 15-year-old daughter was severely raped by about six men. Wow. 3 days later, a woman was attacked in her home, and she was raped by four men, and then they grabbed her 11-year-old daughter to do the same to the daughter. The woman begged and pleaded until finally these guys relented and said, right, we won't do it to your daughter on one condition, that she watches us do it to you again. And if she blinks, if she turns her head away, if whatever, then we will do it to her. So explain to her nicely that she must watch everything. Now, my point is that this kind of thing cannot be justified by anything. It cannot be justified by apartheid. It cannot be justified by ill fortune or colonialism or whatever. It is clearly an attempt to terrify people off the land. So we're, yes, you know, 6 or 10 scenes further on in this movie that you guys are in too. We went through what you're going through. You know, if a person was mildly conservative, they were described as a racist, a fascist, a Nazi, and so on. And that terminology, that nomenclature, is now occurring in your society. And
that's right.
Bullies, in the same way that people are bullied off the land through rape and murder, it bullies university professors to towing the line. It bullies ordinary suburbanites into towing the line. It bullies media people into towing the party line. And we in South Africa are commenting amongst one another very much as we witness this transpire in your society, how much it rings true. Or how similar it is to what was occurred in South Africa in the 1990s, particularly.
Yes, and as you point out, those two horrific rape situations. Again, at its core, it is satanic. It is anti-Christian, and of course, Marxism always has been against religion. And yes, what they do, the strategy that they do when they create these civil wars, it's this Hegelian dialectic of Marx and Engels, where they give you a couple of different alternatives, or they create a class struggle or a race struggle. And that's why your country,
yes,
and our country are so similar. In Europe, they tried to highlight the class struggle, the economic class struggles. In South Africa and in America, they highlight the race struggle. And that's why we're going down exactly, yes, down the same path. They talked about historical materialism. And again, you know, it's, we have, yes, historical injustice, and so we've got to take your stuff. It's always based on envy and on theft. They claim that it is social justice, but it's the same rhetoric that we've seen for the last 200 years. And this is where it ultimately ends up, the fight that you're in right now. Tell us what people can do to help your group there as you're trying to essentially circle the wagon and protect yourself collectively.
Well, the one piece of help that we do desperately need and which benefits us so much, it enables me to go around the world doing talks. I gave a presentation recently to the European Parliament. It helps us to continue to fight the good fight, and we are really boxing very much above our weight with the support, particularly of Americans, is money. If people are able to help us, to give donations. They really contribute to all of the work that we do for our people and for our God. And the best place or the best way to donate is via our website, saintlondes.org. As you said earlier on, in the bottom right-hand corner, there are some donation options, and we say thank you in advance.
And of course, you said you're not going anywhere. And really, there isn't anywhere to go, because this is a worldwide system that is being rolled out in all these different countries at the same time. You're just further along the process than anybody else is. But it's not really going to help if you cut and run, because if you came here to the United States, we're just a couple of decades behind you.
That's absolutely correct. There's no point in going to Australia, New Zealand, Canada, the USA, or Great Britain, the traditional sort of refuges of whites escaping the madness in this country, because our children are going to be exposed to the same thing all over again. So it's better for us to stand here, to fight, and to fall if necessary.
Yes, yes. And as you pointed out before when we've been here talking about this particular issue, you pointed out that the Zulus always maintained their nation and their status within South Africa. And so you had the, for 400 years, as long as Europeans have been in the United States, you had white European South Africans who have been living in South Africa alongside the Zulus. The problem, as you've said in the past, has been massive migration from neighboring African nations into that area. That seems to be where the major conflict is coming from. Is that correct?
Yes, yes and no. We've had tremendous, tremendous immigration. There are millions and millions of refugees in South Africa, so-called refugees, who are involved in much of the crime in South Africa. But what they've really been able to do is that they've been able to go to the underclass of dispossessed, whether they are people of domestic origin or whether they're foreigners, as you correctly allude to these millions of people that have come in here. And they've been able to tell them, to convince them that it's not your fault. And that's it's right. Not your father's fault, and it's not your culture's fault, and it's not your society's fault. It's that man's fault. So we should all be working against him. And it has worked very well for them. It's you've almost got to give them kudos for how well they've used this as a basis, this Hegelian dialectic that you mentioned to twist.
They've been able to
believe absolute rubbish.
They've been able to inflate this aggrieved underclass that they can then exploit for their revolution by opening up immigration, which is the same type of thing that we've seen here as well. All of these same tactics being applied across the world at the same time. But unfortunately, you are a couple of decades ahead of us, but we can see where this is all headed and the plight of the South Africans. And again, if you want to help them, that is SUID, SuedLanders.org. Thank you so much for joining us, Simon. We wish you the best.
Thank you for
in your struggle
us.
There. Thank you. All right, we'll be right back. Stay with us.
Making sense common again. This is the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. As we're talking about the calls for Buttigieg saying, we've got racism here. It's white supremacy is going to be the end of this country. And again, I would ask him. He and his Marxist father and his mentor at Harvard kept telling us that America is all about built on white supremacy. That's why we have to tear down every monument to any accomplishment that has ever happened in America. Yeah, from everything, from Christopher Columbus to the 50th anniversary of the moon landing. They said they didn't have a problem with whether or not we landed on the moon. They had a problem with the fact that they couldn't find enough minorities and women. So we got to destroy that achievement. Merit has to go. Everything has to be based on perceived social injustices. And to give you another example of this, we just had over the weekend a black lawmaker claims that a guy told me, go back to where you came from in a store line. Oh, doesn't that sound familiar? Gee, it's almost amazing how similar that is to the narrative that the mainstream media and the corporate media have been pushing for the last week. This is Georgia State Representative Erica Thomas, black, dominated much of the news cycle Saturday after the African-American lawmaker said she was confronted by a white man who told her to go back where you came from. This white man comes up to me and says, "You lazy SOB, you need to get back where you came from." She explained in the video that she was in an express lane for shoppers with 10 items or less, admitting that she had 15. She's justified her actions by saying she's 9 months pregnant. In the video, which draws on similar remarks made by President Trump, it took off. And as a local television station, WSB-TV, was about to interview her in front of the same Publix grocery store, the man who allegedly told her to go back showed up, and that's when things began to go down the way of Jesse Smollett. Jesse Smollett. Turns out the man was Eric Sparks, and he is a registered Democrat, and he is of Cuban ancestry. And he denied that he told her to, quote, go back where you came from. Upset over hearing over her having too many items, he did admit to the ABC affiliate that he called her a lazy something, but insisted that she fabricated the story for political purposes. No, really? You mean that a politician would fabricate a story, a politician whose essentially her achievements are based on her being a woman of color, that she would fabricate a story to make herself look like a victim, to accentuate her secret identity, not so secret anymore, of a woman of color? He said, "I'm a Democrat and I will vote Democrat for the rest of my life. So call me whatever you want to believe. For her political purposes, make it black, white, brown, whatever. It's untrue." And in a clip that was shared on Twitter by the TV reporter, he is heard telling her to back off before I call the police as she gets a little too close for his personal space. So in other words, she was the aggressor. She was the one making it up because, folks, it is all about the perceived victim status. That's what all this intersectionality is. Breaking everybody into competing demographic groups, positioning yourself into one or more of those groups to elevate yourself politically, even to get into political office, then making sure that those different groups fight each other over the allocation of political power. Everything comes down to politics with these people. You know, we look at all this and everybody's just bemoaning the fact, how can we not, why are we just always talking about politics? Well, that's what Marxists do. They turn everything into politics. Everything becomes a ranking of victimhood. That's where the intersectionality comes in. That's exactly what that is. That's how they rank everything. As Stephen Miller said, and of course we've said this many times, the term racist is being used by the left to punish people and to suppress speech they don't want to hear. Seriously? Yeah. Well, he's right, of course. I would just ask Stephen Miller and the Trump administration when you're going to do something about it. Intervening in the case of one individual on one social media platform isn't good enough. We're going to talk about what's going on with the judges when we come back. Stay with us.
Deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. It's not just Booty Gay is out there. It's every one of these candidates out there talking about reparations now. And even the ones who are not running for president, people like Chuck Schumer, Senate leader of the Democrats, is talking about reparations. I want you to pass that interview that I had with Simon Roche around, because if you want to know where this all leads, just take a look at that. It was the ANC. Nelson Mandela, who is revered and worshipped by these same people who are trying to ban everything, to abolish the Electoral College, to abolish the borders, to abolish ICE, to abolish your private automobiles, your air transportation, your ability to eat meat, your ability to cool or heat your property, everything. These people have worshipped, these same people worship Nelson Mandela. And it was maybe a indication of where this is all headed, in case you didn't know anything about the history of Marxism and how these people use this type of stuff, is maybe a hint of things to come. When, while he was in prison, his wife was necklacing all of her opposition, putting tires around their necks and setting the tires on fire and killing people, that brutal form of execution. But that never did anything to tarnish the image of Nelson Mandela, because he was necessary for what they wanted to push. The ANC were communist, they were Marxist, and as I pointed out, this has always been the tactic. Even before Bill Ayers started pushing the white skin privilege, even before Bill Ayers and his people started trying to establish a race war here in the United States, they were doing that in South Africa. And G. Edward Griffin said they're going to go this route. They're going to position themselves as anti-fascist. Imagine that. Now we have these people, and there's some movement by some people on Capitol Hill to declare Antifa as a terrorist organization. They are a terrorist organization. No doubt about it. The only doubt is whether or not anybody in Washington has the will to do anything about it. I don't look to Washington to do anything about any of our problems. I think our problems are going to have to be solved by us at the local level. And we better do it before there's just isolated pockets of us left, which is what the situation is in South Africa right now. We better organize, and we better elect people at the state and local government who are going to defend our borders, who are going to do something to defend individual rights, and to defend us from the federal government that is encroaching into every aspect of our lives, overthrowing our individual liberties, overthrowing the Constitution that they pledge to support. They take an oath to it, but then they do everything they can to subvert it. And we're going to talk about the judicial system. We've had some wins with President Trump, but still we have the same system in place. And just one more story here about the Democrat candidates. It's not just Buttigieg, but it's also the quote-unquote author, Marianne Williamson. You know, this is a spiritual war, if you don't understand it. And this New Age crystal guru is now jumping on to the bandwagon of being anti-white. And I can't think of anybody that is more white than Marianne Williamson. A spiritual author, they're now calling her, spiritual author. She asked white people at an event to apologize to the black people in attendance for the evils perpetrated against black people throughout U.S. history. Again, no matter how many times you apologize, it will not be enough. President Trump apologized for the send her back chants at the North Carolina rally, but it wasn't enough. And these people never have to apologize. Ilhan Omar, AOC, Ariana Presley, none of them would apologize for inciting a violent terrorist attack by a guy who was Antifa. They absolutely refused to say anything at all about it. Had no regrets whatsoever. They don't have any regrets. They want to see a civil war. And they will use any pretense, especially a pretense of racism, to try to dig up the past and so forth. So this is not going anywhere. Just one more article that was handed to me by my son, who is constantly criticized for being too white. I'm talking about his skin color. Oh, you're just too pale. Here's the title, The Guardian. Pale, male, and stale. Why does modern classical have a gender problem? Modern classical and electronic music is still dominated by stars who are largely pale, male, and stale. Now, I don't know if they mean by classical. They mean something other than the decomposing composers. you know, the people like Bach, Beethoven, Brahms, Mozart. The people whose work has survived for centuries. Do you think any of this idiocracy garbage that's being cranked out today with the, they go get somebody who strips virtually naked, they create a rhythm track behind them, they auto-tune the singing as if you even really needed to do that. It doesn't have a melody, doesn't have harmony, doesn't have any of the elements of music. Do you think any of that stuff is going to last more than a day or two? Certainly isn't going to last centuries. Oh, but as one of these composers tweeted out, because nobody's paying attention to her, she said the biggest names in modern classical and electronic Well, it makes me feel a bit sick in 2019. And then listed a bunch of female artists who are not on the record and people of color who are not on the record. Okay, well, for the record, folks, we're not going to be allowed to have meritocracy, even in the arts. Not even in the arts. But let's take a look at what's going on in the court system. As New American points out, President Trump's court nominees begin to make a difference. When he took office in January 2017, there were more than 100 judicial court vacancies waiting for him to fill. And he has now filled 127 vacancies. And they said that if he continues and if he gets reelected, President Trump's appointees may account for 14% of the federal judiciary. And what they're talking about with that are the actual judges. I think the figure that I've seen, malleable what you call a federal judge. Does that include the administrative courts? I mean, are those really courts? Well, yeah, you know, we have a lot of bureaucracies as part of the administrative state. They not only write our laws, but they also have their enforcement arms and their little tribunals. And I guess we could call those people federal judges as well. But in terms of actual federal judges, you know, that wear black dresses and that sort of thing, there's about 907 of those, if those numbers are correct. And they are hoping that President Trump, who has now appointed 14% of the federal judiciary, that if he's reelected, there's a likelihood. And that would also depend on whether or not the Republicans have the majority in the Senate, because they can put an end to any new federal appointees, appointed judges, if they have a majority of Democrats in the Senate. But if they keep control of the Senate and if President Trump is reelected, they expect that it's likely that he might be able to nominate close to 40% of the country's federal judges. So even under the best scenario, 60% of the judges will not care what the law says. They will be looking at people's supposed motivations. They will be looking at their own personal political beliefs, and they will be legislating from the bench. Right now, that's about 86% of the judiciary that's out there. As they point out, thanks to help from President Trump and with Mitch McConnell, those favoring original intent over living interpretations of the Constitution have increased. So now we've got 14, maybe it'll get to 22% in President Trump's first term. And if he gets a second term, it might get as high as 40%. But then the rest of the people will just be inventing the law out of their own political or personal prejudice. And so then we look at this story here coming out of Florida, out of Reason Magazine. A judge rules that Florida can require a license to give out diet tips. That's right. Forget about your free speech. Everything in America is prohibited, they say, unless expressly permitted, which is an inversion and a perversion of what the Constitution says. The Ninth and Tenth Amendment says that everything for the federal government is prohibited unless expressly permitted. Instead, what they say is, well, everything for you people, everything, you know, the federal government can do whatever it wishes, say the judges. And they made a federal case out of this situation in Florida. We'll be right back with more details. Stay with us. Welcome back. We've got a judge in Florida, a federal judge, ruling that Florida can require a license in order for somebody to talk about diet tips. Imagine that. I mean, what's happened to our free speech? Well, of course, we don't have any free speech anymore, right? At any level, anywhere. And it doesn't matter whether you want to talk about politics or religion or even about diet. And you're not going to be allowed to talk about vaccines. And they don't care what you think about vaccines because they're going to force you. And they're going to force you with all these different aspects. They're going to ban what they don't like. They're going to shove this stuff down your throat or into your arm. They don't care. No diploma, no making money telling people how to eat better, writes Reason Magazine. Want to make money giving out diet tips? Well, in Florida, you better get a bachelor's degree and a license from the state in order to tell people how to eat better. And this is per a federal judge. Upheld the Sunshine State's occupational licensing program that censors diet coaching by those who are not officially deemed dietitians. Now, first of all, As I talked to Richard Proctor on Friday, we talked about judicial overreach. Understand that a federal judge has no jurisdiction in a case that involves a Floridian operating in Florida. And there is a court system in Florida, believe it or not. There are state courts. And this case should have gone up through the state courts, all the way up to the Florida Supreme Court, and then ended there, quite frankly. I think it's a big mistake for all of us to think that every problem must be solved by the federal government, and we always appeal to the federal government, and we always appeal to the federal courts. And guess what? These people don't care about individual liberty. They don't care even about the Constitution that they take an oath to. They don't care. They've upheld the Sunshine State's occupational licensing program. It censors diet coaching by those who are not officially deemed dietitians. Now, how far away are we from having those who are officially deemed journalists? Remember, we were talking to Tommy Robinson, and don't forget to go to my YouTube site. You can see the last interview that Tommy Robinson had with anybody before he went to jail was here, this program. You can find it at youtube.com/libertarian. Don't forget to go there, subscribe, as well as share the videos that you'll find there. We cut out the interviews there, as well as the full shows. But again, when he was sent to jail, you had news outlets, and I put news in air quotes, like The Guardian, saying, this guy, a self-appointed journalist, Tommy Robinson. Well, you know, Tommy Robinson was showing something that the quote-unquote professional journalists, the corporate journalist, if you will, of the UK, were too afraid, too intimidated by the government to show. You know, people like Tommy Robinson, people like Julian Assange will show you the truth about what's happening. People like InfoWars here. We will tell you the truth about what's happening, whether the government wants that truth exposed or not. That's why they attack us. That's why they've attacked Tommy Robinson, Julian Assange. Because it's dangerous to tell the truth when the government wants a lie to go out. And so here they say, well, self-appointed journalist. Well, this is a self-appointed dietitian. You don't have to follow her advice if you disagree with it. You could try it, and if you don't agree with it, you know, in a free market, you would be able to do that. But this isn't a free market, especially because they appeal to the federal government, which doesn't support any principle of individual liberty anywhere, at any time, for anyone. Her name is Heather Del Castillo, Fort Walton Beach. She was applying her training from an unaccredited online holistic health program, offering a six-month coaching program to clients for pay. She is not a licensed dietitian in Florida. When the state found out about her work, they accused her of practicing dietetics without a license. Everything must be licensed. Practicing journalism. Practicing free speech without a license. And they threatened her with hundreds of dollars in fines if she didn't stop. She fought back, arguing in court that the licensing demand violated her First Amendment rights of free speech. Unfortunately for her, the judge, the federal judge, disagreed and tossed the case. He said that it is not an unconstitutional abridgment of free speech rights to require an occupational license to earn a living to talk about certain issues. He went back to a court ruling, a previous case from 2011, Locke versus Shore, a federal court. Again, a federal court. Why is this? It was also a Florida case that did not cross state lines. So under Article 3 of the Constitution, the federal courts don't have any jurisdiction. They're there for cases that involve two different states in contention, or people from two different states in contention, but not for something that is intrastate, within a particular state. Under Article 3, the federal government, federal courts have no jurisdiction, but we appeal to them. We give them authority that they don't have. Anyway, in that particular case, they ruled that it's legal for state to require that interior designers get licensed to legally practice their craft. So if you want to tell somebody where to move their couch or hang their picture, you better get a license for that from the state. Why are they doing that? Well, again, understand that they're letting this happen because they see that there is a compelling state interest for the state to get money. They want you to pay those licensing fees. It isn't because somebody's going to be irreparably harmed by this. It's all about the money. All about the money. And they have a compelling interest to stop our free speech on the internet as well. Why? Because they want to control what we see and hear. That is their compelling interest. And they don't really care what the Constitution says. They don't care what the First Amendment says. They don't care about our fundamental human rights that are supposedly inalienable, that we get from our Creator, that we possess merely by being human beings. They don't care about any of that stuff. Lawyers from the Institute of Justice argued that the subsequent court rulings had weakened that particular finding from 2011. They went to a Supreme Court ruling, again, appealing to our supreme masters, the people who decide what can be done in every corner of our lives. Going back to 2018, they had a situation that went to the Supreme Court, whether California could require pregnancy centers to carry notices indicating whether or not they were licensed. And if they were licensed, requiring the centers to post notices informing women of the availability of free or low-cost services like abortions. The Supreme Court ruled these speech demands were not unconstitutional. Clarence Thomas said speech is not protected only when it is uttered by professionals. But that apparently is the action that they're going to take if there's some money that can be made, or if they can control the public's debate and the right to know information. You know, when you go back and you look at the court cases, they're very selective about what they want to enforce and what they don't want to enforce. Again, the 1946 case, Marsh versus Alabama, the public square was owned by a company town, and they said to the lady, you can't hand out religious tracts. And the Supreme Court said, even if the public square is privately owned, you can't stop that. Subsequent to that, we had cases that went before the courts in California where malls did that. And then the court said, a mall can throw people out. But a mall is not a public square. It is not a public square. It's a retail space. They're very careful about the kind of businesses and things that happen in a retail space. Yes, they have to be able, they make everything available to the public to buy and sell, but they can control their space. We're talking about the public square. We're talking about the digital public square. That is a very different thing. And Twitter, as well as Facebook, have made it clear over and over again that they are the digital public square. That is their business model.
Plant the seed in our home, and boys, let it grow where all can see. Feed it with our devotion, boys, call it the Liberty Tree.
Liberty. It's your move. You're listening to the David Knight Show.
We are the sons of liberty. Save it from the storm, boys.
Boy, better go back to our founding fathers and find out what the liberty really was about. As we were talking about this case in Florida where a dietitian cannot give any advice. We were talking about this during the break. I was talking to Travis, my producer. Travis, what were your comments on this?
I was just curious if they're going to firewall all these people on YouTube that give diet advice. Are they going to pull a China, firewall all that information off?
Well, I think they will. I think they will, don't you? I mean, that's what we're seeing already on Twitter and on social media. I mean, they're already telling people, you know, there's certain things you can't talk about. You can't talk about vaccines, for instance. How much longer is it going to be before they start saying, you can't talk about certain diets, right? Because we know that if you want to go with a keto diet, which is heavy in meat and low in grains, right? They're going to not like that because they don't want you eating meat. That is a political issue for them, right?
Oh, it's hugely political. I mean, personally for me, I think it's partially because they've realized that a largely meat diet is incredibly healthy for you. Personally, I've switched mostly over to carnivore. I mostly only eat meat as a general rule. Mm-hmm. It helps me with certain health issues that I have, and it's worked for people like Jordan Peterson and his daughter with health issues that they have.
Yeah, exactly. And yet, these people have a political agenda where they want to stop anybody from having access to meat. And it's going to be one of those things like automobiles, where they're going to, as they're banning internal combustion engines everywhere throughout Europe, and they're making these moves here in the United States, and it's coming from the federal government here in a big way in the United States. I mean, putting tens of billions of dollars in fines against Volkswagen, locking up one of their executives, and immediately, guess what? Volkswagen comes around, spends billions of dollars to set up a network of charging stations, and they completely shut down their very, very high mile per gallon and reliable diesel engines and, you know, switch over to electric vehicles. I mean, they get that message. And now you've got all these different people out there that are coming up with plant-based meats and so forth. I saw in one country I forget which one it was. It might have been Australia, New Zealand, someplace like that. Basically, you would go into Burger King and you would do a 50-50. And you would, if you wanted to do the 50-50, you would have a 50-50 chance that they would give you some vegan simulation of meat or real meat. And I was surprised because I didn't know they had real meat at Burger King.
That is the shocker in that scenario.
Yeah.
I mean, these people that are going to be licensed by the government, I'd like to point out these same dietitians or nutritionists, whatever you want to call them, are the people that brought you the food pyramid. Remember mm-hmm. that? Mm-hmm. Load yourself up on carbs. Eat as much bread as you can. These people have a vested interest in keeping you sick, yeah. fat, slow, docile.
Yeah.
All this soy stuff.
Don't eat fat. Have lots of sugar instead. I remember when they came out with the fat-free. Everything was fat-free. That was the big fad 30, 40 years ago. This is fat-free. And yet, if you looked at the back of the package, they were loading it up with sugar. What did that do to our population? Now, you can see the results of that walking around the street everywhere around you, right? We're all suffering from diabetes and all these other issues.
Absolutely. I mean, it's crazy. You can see an exact correlation to the amount of carbs and sugar people eat to just the sicknesses everyone has nowadays. How many? One in what is it? 10 people have diabetes.
Probably. Diabetes, early onset of cancer, all these things are attributed to the massive amount of sugar. And again, they increase the amount of sugar and tell us that fat is bad for us, but sugar is good. And yet you need fat for your brain to function properly and so forth, many of these different things. So, yeah, these are the experts. And again, they want to control whether you're talking about abortion or whether you're talking about vaccines or now even your diet. They are going to control every aspect of what you are allowed to see, and only people who are approved by the establishment. I mean, that's what we're seeing now with Microsoft, working with DARPA to put checkpoints next to different news organizations. They call it Election Guard. And as a partner to that, that's News Guard. As a partner to that, they have Election Guard. They're going to be the people who are running the operating system for all of our electronic voting machines and all of the tabulating machines. So they're going to count the votes. In addition to telling you what you can and cannot see, you're absolutely right. You know, when we look at all this health stuff. A U.S. district judge, again, a federal judge, because federal judges preside over everything. You talk about a food pyramid. Oh, we have a power pyramid. We don't have co-equal branches at the federal level. And we don't have a federal government that was supposed to be a co-equal partner with the state governments and with the people, right? They were so concerned that all power would be concentrated in the federal government that the anti-federalists said, we got to have separation of powers. And the federalists said, oh, yeah, no problem. No problem with that. Absolutely no. Well, make sure that we got it separated. And so they took the federal government and they said, well, the federal government is here, and then co-equal to it are perhaps superior to it are the states and the people who created it. Because the Ninth and Tenth Amendment made it clear that unless the federal government was delegated, handed down power, you get delegated from a superior power of the people or the sovereign states that created the federal government. In the same way that you have sovereign states created the United Nations, right? And we're worried about that turning into a world government for the same reasons. And they were worried that the federal government would turn into what we see today. Rome on the Potomac. The Leviathan government that we now have. And so they said, well, you understand you get your authority from the states and from the people. And unless they specifically give you enumerated powers in a particular area, you don't have that power and you can't imply those powers. So all of these specious arguments about the General Welfare Clause and the Commerce Clause and all that stuff, even if those arguments were true, and they're not, even if they were true, the Ninth and Tenth Amendments, which came after that, overturned all of that. So you don't even have to have that discussion about whether or not the Commerce Clause or the Welfare Clause, and that's how they try to justify the UN war on drugs. Oh, well, it's part of the Commerce Clause. No, it isn't. No, it isn't. The Ninth and Tenth Amendment make it very clear, and that's why when they still paid attention somewhat to the Constitution, they had the 18th Amendment, which made alcohol illegal. They had to have that because there is no power under the Commerce Clause to prohibit alcohol or to prohibit marijuana or any of these other things. And yet, look at what we have under this regime, where everything is now under the federal judges and the federal bureaucracies, and we're all their slaves. We now have 76 billion opioid pills. It's not just that you can't have somebody giving you diet advice. You've got these big pharmaceutical companies pushing out this information. Ask your doctor this, ask your doctor that, implying that these things are going to solve your problems. But just listen to the rapidly repeated list of major health concerns that's going to come if you take, that are likely to happen if you take these drugs. 76 billion opioid pills prescribed. The DEA has a system called the Automation of Reports and Consolidated Orders System. ARCOS is the acronym for that. It details how the opioid epidemic exploded into almost every community across the United States between the years 2006 and 2012. The Washington Post showed the data in a graphic here. Well, you guys can pull that up. Shows how big pharmaceutical companies pumped 76 billion oxycodone and hydrocodone pills from 2006 to 2012 into nearly every zip code across the country. It resulted in approximately 100,000 deaths in 4 years. I'll repeat that. 100,000 deaths in 4 years just from the opioids. Where was the FDA in all of this? You know, the FDA just came out and said, oh, stem cells? Oh, no, you can't remove your own body fat. If you have a doctor remove your body fat, put that in a centrifuge and spin it. Now they're saying you've created a drug and we're going to regulate that and shut that down. And if you paid for that to be done and you stored those cells, we're going to destroy those cells, your property. In the same way, why don't they go in and destroy fertilized embryos where they are frozen, right? I mean, everything that you have now belongs to the government. Now they can destroy everything, not just your abstract rights, but your own cells as we move forward. But these same people who are allowing the massive distribution and lying to people about opioids are now telling dietitians, you can't give advice. They're shutting people down from talking about vaccines on the internet. They're shutting people down from talking about abortion. And they have locked up untold numbers of people who used marijuana for medical use or CBD. It's gotten so, things have switched so much the other way. I'll tell you a story when we come back. Welcome back. There's been a new settlement with Equifax. And again, you know, you can always trust your data to all these people in the cloud. Never any problem with that, right? Equifax, you probably didn't trust your data to them that was turned over to them by other people. And then they subsequently lost it. Now there's been a class action lawsuit. Equifax is going to have to pay a $700 million settlement. And as we were talking about this, I said, to the crew, I said, do you think the lawyers are going to get all this money or the victims are going to get all this money? And what did you have to say about that, CJ?
Well, my reaction to it was that in almost every case, you get about $7 when you're part of a mm-hmm. class action suit. And I had one with, I believe, Bank of America at one point, and I got seven whopping dollars. And a good friend of mine was involved in a PayPal class action lawsuit, and he had lost about $2,000. Over the course of a couple of bad transactions that they refused for vintage clothing, and he got a whopping $11 in a settlement.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he came out pretty strong compared to my experience in class action lawsuits. And, you know, we look at this, and they say in the article, Washington Post, well, some people are eligible for up to $20,000. And it's like, oh, seriously? Because when you look at the top line thing that runs through here, because we know it's always the lawyers who make all the money, especially in these class action lawsuits. They said $700 million, and that's going to include $425 million for consumers. But remember, there were 150 million people who had their data compromised. So just do the math. That's less than $3 a person on average. So if somebody gets $20,000, that means a lot of other people are going to get a lot less than $3 each. But, of course, the law firm that put this thing through is going to get $275 million. They're going to make up pretty well. Yes, this is justice. Washington style. Rule by lawyers. Rule by lawyers. Absolutely the case. So this is the way this always works out. You know, we see so many stories now about Jeffrey Epstein. And what happened with him absolutely is an outrage. Everybody's looking at this and saying, how did this happen? Why is this guy still walking the streets? Why is he still after he was convicted on these minor charges. I let him walk with a slap on the wrist. And they're still making these flights, according to people who witnessed it, people who are air traffic controllers saying he was being followed, getting on these planes, getting off of helicopters, I think, with this large entourage of very, very young girls. If they were wearing if they had the braces removed, they were too old for him and so forth. I mean, just hideous what's going on with this. And the connections that he has to all the elite people all over the world. And, of course, that's the real issue with it, because we know that this is trickle-down corruption. Trickle down depravity. And I've been focusing really more on what is happening to our children at the bottom level as this depravity trickles down from the top. As I said at the top of the program, if these people really cared about any of this stuff, not only would he have gone to jail, but we still haven't had anybody talk about getting rid of the statute of limitations on people being a pedophile. Look, it's very difficult for the kids to come to grasp the reality of what happens. Typically, it takes them years, decades, to go back and fully grasp what has happened and complain about it. And it's difficult enough to try to prove a case decades later. But that's the reality of the situation. And if you take away that ability to prosecute these people, you've basically given a free pass to this crime. And that's why it is so rampant. And they've given a free pass to this crime because this is much broader than even the elites that are flying on Jeffrey Epstein's plane. And I hope these people all go to jail. But I seriously doubt it, because we don't see anything being done about that. And you have to understand how this depravity trickles down to your family, to your child, in the school that they attend. And this is trickling down through this LGBT agenda that is being foisted on kids as early as kindergarten, through the centralized control of our educational system, just like we got the centralized control of everything else, of the federal judges. Well, it's the centralized educational system. I tweeted out over the weekend, again, you can find me on Twitter, Libertarian. You can follow me there, find stuff to retweet, because they're not going to notify you in most cases, unless you're a new follower. You won't get any notification of what I tweet for the most part. They just unfollowed my wife from my account over the weekend after badgering her to turn off notifications from me. They finally just unfollowed me from her, had her unfollow me, did it on their own. And you can also find me on YouTube, Libertarian, there as well. You can subscribe there, share the videos, topical videos, as well as a full show. But I tweeted out over the weekend, as this story came out, UK politician who lobbied for gender-neutral toilets is charged with child sex abuse. And I said, this is exactly what happened in North Carolina. Do you remember the first time that it was a big deal? Everybody was going to boycott North Carolina. All the movie people, you know, that are really at the core of pushing this kind of depravity in the United States. They were going to boycott North Carolina because North Carolina pushed back against these people in the city of Charlotte, a little liberal enclave there in North Carolina, and they were going to open up bathrooms to transgenders. And the guy who was behind it in North Carolina was a convicted and registered sex offender. And the Charlotte Observer covered that up. Never talked about that. Finally, the conservative press, I think it was Breitbart, that found it. His name is Chad Severance. He's president of the so-called Charlotte Business Guild. No, all they did was they used their LGBT mafia to try to shut down people doing business in North Carolina, as there was a pushback against that. In 1998, he worked as a youth minister. And in that capacity, he allegedly lured younger men to his apartment to spend the night, where he showed them pornography and tried to talk them into sex, and he was convicted in one charge of sexual molestation of a minor. As a result of his conviction in 2000, 2 years later, he had to register with the police on a regular basis for a minimum of 10 years. And the Charlotte Observer knew about it. They failed to disclose it because they wanted to push the agenda, the transgender agenda. And now we've had the same thing happen. Surprise, surprise, in the UK, a politician who's been lobbying for gender-neutral toilets is now charged with child sex abuse. He hasn't been convicted yet, but he's been charged. The other guy was already charged, convicted, registered, and the press refused to even talk about it. In the UK, an English town councillor who hopes to make government-owned facilities gender-neutral has been charged with 9 counts of sexually touching a child. And he has resigned from the, wait for it, Conservative Party. You know, my dad always warned me to stay away from men who hung out in restrooms. And I never really understood why. And he wouldn't explain it to me. He just said, you don't need to know. Just stay away from them. Stay away from politicians who are preoccupied with restrooms and with children and with your children. And understand how they're foisting that through our schools. All right, folks, before we get any later on this, I want to remind you of the specials that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. That's what funds this program and everything that we do. We have continued the 1776 Worldwide specials that we put in as part of our 34-hour round-the-clock broadcast about a week and a half ago. We still have those specials up, and we have many products that are $17.76. We have Brain Force Plus. We have Ultra 12. That's our vitamin B12 formula. We have our nascent iodine formula, Survival Shield X2 and X3 nascent iodine. All those $17.76. Our Super Silver Wound Dressing Gel. That's a topical gel that you can use for scrapes, abrasions, other things, even burns. I mean, they use silver for major burns in hospitals still. It's very effective at fighting both bacteria and virus. Nano Silver, and you can get that now for your use at home with Super Silver Wound Dressing Gel, and you can get it for $17.76. Many other products are All Natural Sleep Aid, Knockout, Winter Sun Plus, our vitamin D formula. All of those, $17.76. At least 10% off everything in the store. Some items up to 75% off in the store. InfoWarsStore.com. You know, we're talking about 1776. I still have my faded and tattered 1776 cap that I wore at the Bundy Ranch standoff in the desert. Faded quite a bit just from that one episode. But yeah, we're out in the sun quite a bit with that. But it's absolutely amazing to me. I was wearing it this weekend and had a guy say, oh, I really like your hat. I don't know if we sell that or not. If we do, it is 1776 itself, because all shirts and hats are now 1776 at InfoWarsStore.com. But I've been dismayed to see many young people working as clerks in stores. I've had mentioned to me at least two or three times. I'm checking out and a guy says, oh, yeah, how about that game the other day? I was like, what game? Yeah, you're a baseball fan, right? I see your cap. Thinking that they don't have any idea. This is how effective the educational system has been at eradicating American history and culture. They think that 1776 is about the basketball team, the 76ers. I am as clueless about the 76ers as they are about the 1776. All right, that's it for our broadcast today. Thank you for listening.